Randolph Shepherd vendor and your business depends on providing services in government buildings, what can you do to protect your business and your income? You know, there's a saying that if you do what you've always done, you will get what you've always got. And that is just not true anymore. With all of these changes, if we do what we've always done, our businesses are going to get smaller, our income is going to be reduced, and we're going to lose Randolph Shepherd vendors. We are going to have to innovate and change with the times, because doing what we've always done is just not going to cut it in this new world. So in business, you have three options for maintaining or increasing your income. One, persuade the same number of customers to buy more stuff from you. Two, reduce your costs of selling so that more of what you bring in is profit that goes to your bottom line. And three, increase the number of customers. So since we don't have a huge amount of time this morning, I'm going to focus on the first strategy. If we have the same or a diminishing number of customers in our vending facility, how can we sell more to each customer? So the first thing I have to say, and I really hope this applies to none of you, but it might apply to a few of you, the single most important thing that Randolph Shepherd can do to increase per customer sales in vending machines is installing card readers. The typical purchase using cash is under $2. When you give people the option to buy with card or Apple Pay or other electronic means, if you don't make any other changes, your app will go up by 40%. Maybe somebody like me buys a Snickers bar and a bottle of water or a soda because they're not hunting in their pockets or their wallets for dollar bills or quarters. And that assumes, if you are thinking about people hunting in their pockets, that it assumes that your customers are still carrying cash. A July survey by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco found that 30% of respondents said they're avoiding using cash and using card payments instead because of worries during the pandemic. And that's in addition to the 30% of customers who weren't carrying cash before the pandemic, for a whopping total of almost 60% of people who are not carrying cash. Now, if your business can't serve 6 out of every 10 potential customers, that's a serious problem. And you're not serving the public. You're serving a working age population. That's your customer base. And so that excludes retirees, the age group that is most likely to carry cash. And the age group, the demographic of your customers skews younger, and use of card payments goes up. Most people under 30 don't ever carry cash. A majority of people under age 40 don't carry cash, and vendors without card readers don't have any potential to sell to those customers. Now, in Randolph Shepherd, we talk about card readers like they're an innovation. They're not. They've been around for a long time. And I know that there is a reluctance among agencies sometimes to invest in card readers, and I'm deeply sympathetic to vendors who worry about how they're going to be able to manage a new technology. I have to tell you, I am the person who had a PC on my desk. I went away on a business trip. My husband had been trying to persuade me to change to an Apple. I didn't want to change because I didn't want to learn a new system. I went on a business trip. When I came home, my PC was gone and my Apple computer was sitting on my desk. I didn't have a choice. I had to learn it. And it worked better. But if it were up to me, I would have stuck with the old technology instead of having to learn the new one. So for folks who are concerned about using and adapting to new technology, I'm deeply sympathetic, but it's creating a cost for your business. Obviously, what you sell is really important too if you're trying to sell more to customers. At the start of the pandemic, obviously, all food service businesses saw immediate drops in sales. But pretty quickly, some restaurants adapted and actually saw their sales go up. Starbucks, Wendy, and Yum! Brands all bounced back relatively quickly, and by the second quarter of the pandemic, they were doing better on revenues and profits than Wall Street analysts had predicted. And the lessons that they learned and the changes they made at that time deep in the pandemic, I think have some possible lessons and strategies for Randolph Shepherd. So let's take a minute and how did they do it? So at Starbucks, in the second quarter of the pandemic, customer traffic went way down. They had many fewer customers coming into a Starbucks store nationally on any given day. But they figured out strategies to persuade people to spend more when they actually visited. So they made changes to their product offering and their advertising to persuade customers to load up on food and drinks when they visited. They shifted their product mix to provide more high-quality items. They were higher priced, but they also had bigger profit margins. People who came into the store in the morning for coffee, for example, looked at those higher quality items and they were persuaded to pick up something for lunch or for an afternoon snack also. During the pandemic, as people focused on COVID and worries about health, and as a lot of people like me put on weight during the pandemic, people shifted to looking for more healthy options. Starbucks expanded its healthy options, and they found a lot of takers. When Wendy's announced better than expected revenue in the middle of the pandemic, as well as improved profit margins, people asked how they said they got there by investing in expanding the variety of their options, including offering higher quality, more expensive items. And they said higher than average customer checks, purchasing higher profit margin items, were the way that they survived the dark days of the pandemic. Restaurant brands, as another example, did the same thing. They improved the quality of the food on their lunch menu and expanded their breakfast offerings at their Tim Hortons chain by offering more healthy options. In part because healthy items are higher priced and have higher profit margin, they were able to boost their revenues. I'd like to pause to point out that, you know, healthy items and discussions about healthy choices is not new in Randolph Shepherd. But until the pandemic, most of those conversations were in the context of mandates coming down from above that required vendors to stock food items, whether people actually wanted to buy them or not. But things have changed. Now we're talking about healthy options that are driven by customer preferences. And that might change the equation. In any food service business, the key to success is paying attention to what your customers want. So paying close attention to small shifts in purchases in your vending machines, surveying your customers, hanging around the vending machine at times when people are coming in to make purchases so you can talk to them about what they want, and maybe experimenting with some different options can help you glean information that can lead to higher profit margins and higher sales. Traditional snacks with well-known brands are also seeing increased sales in the pandemic. So there's a contradiction. People want healthy food, but they're also looking for comfort food. So stocking your machine is important there as well. Don't run out of the Snickers bar or the potato chip that is the favorite option in your region. During the pandemic, they also saw shifts to people purchasing larger sizes. They're making fewer trips to the vending machine or the grocery store, and so they want to buy a larger size. Or they just want a bigger snack because everybody's struggling a little bit in the pandemic. larger sizes have higher cost and they're also more profitable. So look at larger sizes if that's an option in your vending machine or if you have a micro market or a snack bar. Let's take a minute to talk about micro markets also, because that can be a very important option for Randall Shepherd vendors. Now, I will say, I was on a national call recently. Terrell might have been on that call too, and I'm going to not say who it was who made this comment, because I'm going to protect the guilty. But on a national phone call that I was on recently, someone in Randall Shepherd talked about micro markets as an innovation. Micro markets were an innovation in vending 10 years ago. They are not new. They are not cutting edge anywhere except Randall Shepherd. But they offer really important opportunities for vendors. With a micro market, you can have a wider variety of products. It is easier to adjust sizes. You have a lot more flexibility with a micro market than you do with a vending machine. People are willing to buy salads and sandwiches and other higher quality, higher profit margin items from micro markets when they're not willing to buy them from a vending machine. Micro markets can be available for 24 hours a day to people working late in the building when cafeterias or snack bars can't really do that. The electronic payments with micro markets offer all of those benefits that we talked about with card readers, with vending machines. Micro markets offer reduced staffing costs relative to snack bars or cafeterias. And there are some really creative things going on in some states where the vendors who have micro markets are purchasing their sandwiches and salads and other fresh items from other Randolph Shepherd vendors who have snack bars. So that's raising all boats and benefiting both the Randolph Shepherd vendor with the snack bar, who is preparing and selling the sandwiches and salads, and also helping out the Randolph Shepherd vendor with the micro market. Micro markets can also help Randolph Shepherd vendors offer different kinds of products that expand business options. Like, if you have a micro market, you could stock a limited amount of milk and eggs and bread so that people can make their emergency purchases at the micro market at work instead of having to stop at a store on the way home. Meal kits are another interesting possibility, and they've become really popular during the pandemic. I think a lot of people know about the different meal services that will bring boxes to people's homes with the ingredients for meal kits, but they're not the only ones who saw this as an opportunity. So during the pandemic, Ruth's Chris, Texas Roadhouse, and Lawry's Steakhouse all started selling raw meat and to-go meal kits to be cooked at home. Even my local grocery store, during the pandemic, put out a case at the front of the store when you first come in the door with a recipe and the main ingredients to give people a quick, easy dinner idea. This was discussed on a conference call with financial analysts during a quarterly report on Albertsons, which is the second largest grocer in the United States. And Vivette Sankaran, who is the chief executive of Albertsons, which is the second largest grocery store in the U.S., said the principle is to make things easier for the shopper. And that's why they were offering these easy to put together meal ideas. So let's say that you have some extra refrigeration and storage capacity at your facility because sales are down. Could you email building employees and have them place orders for meal kits that they pick up at the end of the day on days that they're in the office and bring them home to cook? You might even be able to partner with a local meal kit company, which could reduce its own staffing and delivery costs by delivering meals to you at your office building for people to take home at night. Savings to the meal delivery company could become profit to the blind vendor. Obviously, if you have vending machines and not cold shelves, this is not an option for you. And even if it is an option for you, it could be a really big change, and it would require effort on the part of vendors to try some new things that we've never done before. But the companies that are succeeding are putting in the work, figuring out what customers want, and are willing to pay for. Convenience and speed are also important, especially if people are worried about possibly catching COVID by hanging around in common spaces. So as an example, Chipotle Grill invested heavily in digital offerings, allowing people to place their orders remotely and come in and pick them up. Their third quarter digital sales, the first quarter that this was really fully up and running, tripled from the previous year and represented half of the company's revenue. So half of the total revenue of Chipotle at the height of the pandemic was coming in from people who placed their orders over their app or over the web before they came into the store. Shortly before the pandemic, a vendor in Georgia with a snack bar in a federal office building began offering employees the option to order grilled items online. Employees could place their order over the phone when they were leaving for work and pick up a breakfast sandwich or scrambled eggs when they arrived at the office. Sales of breakfast items for that vendor increased significantly because people didn't have to worry about coming in, waiting in line, and making themselves late for work. At that facility, employees can also place their order for lunch items and come downstairs to pick them up when they're ready. Briefly, to touch on a couple of other options being explored by some SLAs and vendors. First is non-consumable vending, which was also highlighted by the president of NAMA at the NCSAB conference. Could you sell COVID tests in your vending machine? Could you put masks in the vending machine? Sanitizing wipes? Earbuds? One vendor that I know of was selling earbuds in his vending machine long before COVID hit. And it turned into his number one selling item, especially, interestingly, around Christmas time when people were picking them up to be stocking stuffers. They're big dollar items, so you're going to have to be able to have card reader payments, but they have very big profit margins. We all are also going to have to think outside the box about ways to expand our customer base. It could take the form of franchises that attract customers from the public, as well as building employees if you're in an urban area and a building where the public has access. One SLA is looking at a coin-operated laundromat as an option. It has high capital costs for equipment, but very high returns on the investment. We could think about non-federal, non-government office buildings, like banks. Think about providing services to car dealerships where people have to wait for car repairs, or providing the snack options at hotels, which have seriously cut back on their restaurant offering. I'm going to stop here because there's a lot more to say, but we're out of time. Again, I would like to say some of the things I suggested may sound really far-fetched to you, and you might feel that nothing I talked about today could work for you. And you might be right, but I hope that some of the ideas I suggested spark other ideas for you, creative options you hadn't thought of before that might work in your business and your community. Thank you again for including me today. I know for most of you it has been a really rough year. I'm grateful to you for all that you have been doing to defend blind vendors in Connecticut and to help blind vendors around the country. And I look forward to continuing to work with you as we travel this journey together.
Thank you, Katrina. Does anyone have any questions for Katrina? I think her presentation was very good, very enlightening. Certainly, I've written down some thoughts and just hearing some of your thoughts and processes as to some ways we can maybe expand our micro-market opportunities within Connecticut. And so there was definitely some key pieces of information provided. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Katrina?
Well, if I just may, at the beginning of the meeting, I said this is a committee meeting, and any other operators that are listening in, can chime in under open forum. Or this is an opportunity for any operator to have a question to unmute, and you may ask a question. That's all.
This is Frank Robertson. It's kind of a question for both Tyrell and Katrina. She had made mention of the possibility of a cafeteria providing the fresh food for the micro markets. I believe in the past you told me that was not an option by state law.
That's correct.
So in the state of Connecticut, anytime you prepare food outside of the location in which you're looking to resell, that location which you receive the food from would be considered a commissary and would require FDA approval of your kitchen to be able to produce or remanufacture a resellable item in Connecticut per health code. So that may be something that we may not be able to entertain unless there's another method as to being able to get around that. But our existing locations in which we operate under in state buildings are not set up to be considered commissaries, very similar to us. Why the Servo Nation partnership in with operators that have chosen that route with the micro market, they are able to provide food to those partnerships, but just as you had inquired from Servo Nation a while back, providing you fresh food, they were also not able to provide you that because Connecticut has strict guidelines in regards to that.
So this is Katrina, and I will say something that might get me in trouble, but I can say it easier than the state staff can say, obviously. In the pandemic, sometimes rules that have been really strictly adhered to have been able to be more flexible. And I would point to the blind vendors in California who went to the state legislature and got their rest areas exempt from requirements to pay utilities. So rest areas that are operated by anyone other than a blind vendor have to pay the State Department of Transportation utilities, and the blind vendors made the case that given current economic conditions, they shouldn't have to do that, and they were able to get the legislature to change the rules. So, again, that might make me sound like a troublemaker, but sometimes there are possibilities for folks who are willing to put in the work.
Certainly, I mean, we can certainly reach out to the health department and see if there's been any amendments or any allowances during this time on manufacturing of and reselling of items outside of non-commissary pointed locations. And if so, I mean, it's definitely a fantastic opportunity if we are able to set up a location to provide that type of opportunity. Again, everything is nothing's off the table. I think, the mindset going forward for sure, Katrina, and to everyone on the call, is that if it can be done, let's do it. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no question. We are definitely in times of survival, so we if there's any method in which we can think outside the box that could be a benefit to an operator, we could take a look. So certainly, this week we can reach out to the health department just to be careful the possibility for sure.
Well, I have a question.
Hi, Randy.
Hi. My question, I guess, kind of for in general. So in regards to the non-food items that you were speaking of, is there any rules, Tyrell, I guess, to me, is there any rules being that we can't sell this stuff, as well as there any limitations to places in which we could, like schools, and a lot of us have community colleges and such. Is there any, we would have to work that out with our current vendor to put their vending machines and masks and other things.
Yeah, I mean, I can
answer that. number two, the ones that you still come to Katrina, what are going to be in, like, colleges and office, or just office buildings, or, you know, with courthouses, and do you know what other things were just non-food items that would be machines?
So Tyrell, I would defer to you for your in-state rules.
Okay. So I would say that, you know, obviously our state operates under the statewide vending contract. So any discussions in outside of the general scope in which the statewide vending contract provider offers, that would have to be side discussions to see if they would be of interest to provide those non-food items in their vending machine, and if so, you know, we could certainly include those. In the case of Frank Roberts, who operates his own vending machine in Wallingford, I'm certain he would be able to provide an item, a non-food item, should he feel there's a need in the buildings in which he occupied that vending machine or still fills that vending machine. So in our case, I'd say we're a bit different because we operate under the statewide vending contract. So it's not just a matter of our suggestion. It has to be a mutual agreement upon our agency and the vending provider as to wanting to, you know, expand the option of vending opportunity within the buildings they serve.
This is Brian. First off, thank you, Katrina, for the wonderful presentation. I think those were fantastic ideas that you suggested, and I would say that, you know, certainly I won't be with the Bureau much longer, but perhaps these are things that Andrew Norton, our legislative administrative advisor, can do some research on to find out just to what extent things can be defined as vended products to allow or perhaps a greater opportunity to sell products through vending machines that may not have been traditionally seen as vending products, but as you said, Katrina, perhaps because of the pandemic, there are particular needs that could be fulfilled through vending machines that had not previously ever been contemplated. So I think you bring forth some very important suggestions on how product lines might be expanded point of allowing for profits that weren't necessarily in the past even contemplated. So thanks for that suggestion. And I think that unfortunately Andrew Norton couldn't be on this call, but I think that's a great place for Tyrell to turn is to have Andrew to maybe seek out some additional perspective on the definition of a vended product in Connecticut.
Like, I just like to say, I think the Connecticut vendors are really fortunate to have a creative agency that's willing to work with you on things like this. Not every agency has the ability to do that. And we have also seen that when the Connecticut vendors get together to advocate for themselves, they've been able to make important things happen for vendors in Connecticut and across the country. And so, you know, sometimes even when the word comes back, the regulations or the law won't allow it. Obviously, the state agency can't encourage vendors to think about who to talk to maybe change some of those rules and regulations. But there are folks in California and other places who've been successful in doing that, and I imagine if it's important enough, Connecticut vendors could take a stab at that as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions for Katrina at this time? All right. Well, Katrina, we thank you for your time.
Sorry, Tyrell. This is Shelley. Katrina, you mentioned that you stopped shortly. I guess I'm not sure if I misunderstood that you were kind of cutting your presentation short, is there a way that we could access anything else that you wanted to